So we're going to adjust a little bit. I'll stay up here. So Mr. Ost will have the mic. If there are individuals who have a question, if you can come use the mic so that those online can make sure, and even in the audience, that you can hear the question being asked. So before I started, I was going to mention something. Some of you may be familiar with the harmony that I created. I think a few here have a copy of. I did not print up, you know, hundreds and hundreds of these when I produced this. I did an initial printing, and then I've just sort of added to the printings as I find interest and people want copies. Doing it that way, though, creates a challenge in that the cost to produce these each time I print them, the cost depends on how many I'm producing. So if you're familiar with the print world, the more copies I print, the cheaper per piece the copies are. So if you're interested in having a copy of this, maybe you can start a sign-up list locally, and then I can let you know, based on the numbers, what the cost would be. If there's still interest, I can get them printed. I can have them shipped here so that you can have them. So this copy is already out of date. I've added several appendixes and other information throughout the book. I've fixed some typos and whatnot, so it's substantially the same. But it has some introductory comments, some background of the history of the time, and then, of course, the harmony itself as it goes through. I've got various footnotes and study notes and biblical references scattered throughout the whole thing. And then at the back, there's, 12 or more different appendixes on longer topics that have to do with that time period. So if that's of interest to you, just let me know and we can go from there. Okay, so you'll have to kind of come up to the mic because I can't really see hands from where I am. But if you have any questions about the various council business, more than happy to answer what I can.
So I got a text. This one comes from Mr. Ron Getz. It's not necessarily about the council, but you may have some thoughts here. Ron asked via text, why are the presenters now not wearing ties when they're giving short presentations like Mr. Shaby did?
If you're talking about the stuff that's put out on social media, a lot of that is taken from other things. A lot of it comes from ABC classes, in which case they may or may not have ties. When it comes to the longer format videos like the Beyond Today, they still are dressing up. Beyond that, I really can't speak to the specifics because I don't know. We have traditions in the church, and one of them is that we dress up. So why do we dress up? Why do I wear a suit and a tie and a coat? Why do we come presented the way we do? Well, historically, we've taught, we're coming before the God of the universe, right? So we want to come presenting ourselves the best. And there's a spiritual or biblical principle. The priest could not just come with any attire, right? It had to be cleaned. It had to be pressed. It had to be not worn, all these sort of things. So that's been our culture. But outside of the church culture, the world doesn't view it that way. In fact, anymore, if you show up dressed as I am, they're a little leery. That because it's not the presentation that they make. It's much more casual. If you've watched other religious things online, YouTube or whatever, they're very casual. And so it's a different generation, different culture that's out there. So that may be part of it. But if you need a more exhaustive answer to that, I'd encourage you to wait a couple of weeks and write Mr. Delamater and ask him. That's his job now. All right. Anyone else?
I didn't know we were doing this, so it's exciting. So as far as social media goes and the rise of short-form content over the last 5-10 years, and a new media person, it sounds like, what is the church specifically doing to kind of attract the youth? Because it seems like that's kind of how they're consuming things online, like TikTok, Instagram,
yes,
all of that.
It's an ongoing discussion to answer the question. Sorry, I can't really give you more details. Let me back up and sort of set the stage for how we've structured ourselves in United. So the overall body that determines the course of what we do in the church is what's called the General Conference of Elders. So any elder, as the term is in good standing, right? Recognized, serving, not teaching heresy. Those elders select the Council of Elders. So the 12 men that serve on the council. Those 12 men then direct by policy is the expression we use. And what that means is we are not to micromanage. We are like a board of directors in that we select a president. We then advise and approve who the president selects to be the operation managers and so forth. The president is tasked with taking care of the day-to-day responsibilities of how the church does things, and that includes even the presentation of short videos or any other media effort that we would have. There have been an ongoing discussion in terms of what that should look like. So even in the update, I believe, that went out yesterday, Mr. Elliott mentioned that they're going to be doing some tests in the upcoming month or two to see about having more and different presenters for the various things online. One of the criticisms we get, and I'm in that category, so I kind of chuckle, you know, that what we present is just a bunch of old white men. And there's a disconnect, right, to a large group of demographics out there. The young adult audience is one of them. If I dress up in this format and try to preach what we preach on a weekly basis, just my presence, the way I look, how I dress, that's a turnoff to a lot of people. And so there is discussion about how we can better address those generations, those demographics, what that looks like, content-wise in terms of length. And that's a challenge for some because, again, traditions are hard to break, and there's a reason why we have traditions, but they're not sacrosanct, but they can be if we're not careful. You know, many of you know the younger generations won't watch a 30-minute, let alone an hour program, but they'll watch 2 hours of 5-minute videos. Right, so it's a matter of how you present it, what you put forward. The content has to be much more punchy, has to be much more catchy, provocative in the right ways to capture the attention, to keep them from simply scrolling on, moving on. So there's nothing hard and fast. Every year the council puts together, with the input of the administration, so the president, the operation managers, what's called a strategic plan. I don't know how many of you have seen that. That has to be approved every year by the General Conference of Elders. And so we have things in that strategic plan that talk about local initiatives. It talks about public proclamation. It talks about congregational care and how all these different things look like, what we're shooting for. And the whole design of strategic planning is you don't know what you need. So you're doing educated guesses based on information resources you do have, and then analyzing. And that's still something I think that we're learning to do as a church. We don't get rid of things easily that don't work or have run its life. So to the point of the comment, the younger generations, they don't read emails, they don't read magazines, they don't watch videos. They listen to their peers. And if they say, well, I watched this TikTok video, they're all going to go watch that TikTok video. Or I read this piece, or whatever it happens to be. And so we have to pivot. Christ spoke in a different way than we speak even in the 21st century. Right? So that's part of the adjusting that's going on. Beyond that, I'm sorry I don't have more specifics that I can give you any kind of thing that you can hang your hat on. But it is a discussion that we're having more and more. I'm hoping we have a council retreat scheduled the second week. I think it's the second week of November, where the council's just going to get together with the president, operation managers, and we're going to have conversations about some of these things. We won't make decisions. Nature of retreat is it's not on record, sort of spitballing, you know, blue skying different things and talking about some of these items and what we need to focus on and give some direction to the administration to begin to try some of these things. So, anyone else? One of the questions that I have that I'll bring forward to you is what does God want us to do as a church? And I haven't seen a good answer to that yet, and I'll explain why I'm asking that question to myself. At the beginning of COVID back in March of 2020, myself and I'm sure many, many others expected that the income of the church would drop significantly as people, even though they were receiving in many cases subsidies or whatever from the government, but they weren't working to the level that they were. There was a lot of question marks as to even what business would look like, whether things would scale back dramatically, and what that would do to various economies. And so the expectation was that the income would probably drop, and we didn't know what that would look like. We made some plans to pivot appropriately or as best we could if those things began to materialize. But the really interesting thing happened that no one saw coming is that our income every quarter since then, so businesses, the church is no different as an organization, were based on fiscal quarters. So every fiscal quarter since the fourth quarter of 2020, income has been higher than projected and expenses have been lower than projected for a net plus, right? We don't know what to do with that money. Why is God blessing us in that way? We still have the programs that we've done, whether it's Beyond Today, whether it's the Magnified, whether it's the social media things we're doing, the magazines, the Compass Check, you know, all these camps, all these different things. We're still doing all of those things. But what is it that we should address? And I personally, this is my own heresy for what it's worth, I think we need to focus on that younger demographic, older teens up to mid or late 30s. That's an audience that we're really not hitting, and it shows in the responses that we get, even surveys that we do. There's also a very curious thing within that demographic, and that is mainstream Christianity as a whole has been noticing a decline for decades now in attendance. And the decline is, for the most part, in those younger generations, right? They don't have families attending. And so as the older generations die off, I mean, I'm sure it's the same here in Atlanta. In Milwaukee, I have my pick of church buildings to buy if I had the cash. They are just replete in the real estate market. But the problem is no other church wants to buy them or can buy them because banks won't lend to them because they're folding at such a large rate. So even if they want to buy, oftentimes they have to come up with creative ways in order to buy. But they don't know what to deal with this. So in mainstream Christianity, the retention of that demographic group, so 25 to 35 or so, is only in the low 30s, 30%. So even if you have a family and children grow up in the church, only a third of those continue into later adulthood. Any idea what it is in United? There's no wrong answer. Throw a number out. 20%. Anyone else? 70. Anyone else? 50. 70 is the right number. It's in the low 70s. So we're doing some things right, and I think the biggest thing that we're doing right in developing a reason for those young people, the children that become teens and young adults, to stay with the church is the grounding they get through the camp program. I think the camp program is one of the best things we have as a church because it's not just fun. It's fun teaching them in God's way as well, highly focused on his word, the themes, the daily compass checks, and so forth. But we're still not addressing a lot of things that they're addressing. So they're facing, even though it may look like it's sort of trending out of vogue, if you will, you know, the whole transgender things, but you still have a very real aspects of gay and lesbian lifestyles. You still have the godless culture around. And so historically, even outside the church, it's noted that if you can retain that youth group through college, that 25 or so, most likely they'll stay with it the rest of their life. College is the pivot point because they're facing a lot of things, evolution. Evolution is pushed hard, 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 especially if you go into degrees like biology, not the hard sciences like engineering, but softer, if you will, softer degrees. And so they have a lot of challenges. My wife and I, we have 27-year-old twins, 28-year-old twins, sorry, a boy and a girl. Their college years, I didn't have to face any of what they face in their college years. It's just a much different world. So that's something I hope that we can address with some of this money, and maybe that's something that we'll talk about in November.
So I'm going to read an additional question. This one comes from Tammy Drake. It has kind of two parts. I say two parts. It has a question up front, but then an example afterward. Tammy writes, why are we instructed to only get our information from the United Church of God? And then she provides an example that offers a little clarity here. Why were we instructed to only use UCG for information updates on Rick Shaby?
I don't know that I can answer the Rick Shaby question. I think part of it was that they wanted, they didn't want different stories, if you were, being promoted out there. But the wrinkle was that the Shaby family was also releasing information through Mr. Kennebec, who was the pastor in Central Florida, and that was getting out faster than Home Office was able to then send out emails. And so there were comments made along that line. The Shaby family was fine with the information that was going out, but I think that was part of the concern, and that beyond that, I can't really speak to that. Was that the thrust of it, or was there more in terms of general information?
Yeah, so again, I read the first part, and then as she offered, illustrated with the back half, just to make sure. I'm going to guess part of this was the specifics in regard to the information release from Mr. Shaby.
So going back even to the budget thing, one of the challenges that we've had, even from the founding of United, it's only gotten worse over the years, is the laborers for the harvest. You know, I'm 65 now, starting to give serious thought about when I might retire. And Mr. Meyer's update is ministerial and member services operation manager. He gives a report every council meeting, and we're in a deficit. You know, we have four men that have been hired that are in the process of being trained. I'm assuming later this year, beginning of next year, they'll be assigned various congregations. But that's four men. I know of at least a dozen or more areas that need a pastor. We either have pastors that have too many congregations. I mean, you can't really pastor four congregations effectively. It's just too much distance. We're too scattered. Getting a circuit, you know, having time with members. So that's a very real challenge. So if you want to beseech God for his direction, I would ask that you do that. And that's one major way we need direction. But the challenge also, and I understand it, if you have a young man who's doing very well and serving and has all the right qualifications, if you will, looking at Timothy and Titus, oftentimes they're also doing very well financially in whatever career they have. And it's hard to ask a guy to take a half a pay cut to go from making mid-six, you know, or, you know, $150,000, $200,000 a year down to making what the starting salary of a pastor is in United. It can be challenging. So that's one area where we do need some help and direction. Don't know what God has in mind there. He's provided to this point. But the ministry is not getting younger. When I was hired, I was the youngest pastor in United. And since then, they've hired younger men, obviously. But I think the average age of the pastoral ministry is in the high 50s. So we just don't have young men that are in their 30s that, you know, have 50 years to dedicate to this. So God will have to direct. All right. Anything else? I think that's Mr. Beam.
If you can still see me back there, they must have turned the lights down for you. Where are you seeing, do you have any metrics that show where most of the growth is coming from? Like, I know we can look at our congregation, but Atlanta's real transient. It's the biggest international airport in the world. A lot of industry, a lot of corporations here. So we get a lot of transplants from up north. They were already in United that move in, or out west. Sometimes other COGs.
Yep.
We do get some brand new people that find us. Most of them seem to find us online. I ask everyone, how did you find us? And most people say, well, I Googled the Sabbath or the Holy Days and your church popped up. So do y'all have any metrics that sort of are tracking that somehow nationwide? And then the second question was, like, if you're getting a 70% retention rate on the youth, it seems like donating to youth camps is a good ROI versus...
Yes. So going to the camp program first, yes, you can do that. But to answer your first question, the number one area of growth are the children that grow up, marry, have kids, that stay in the church. That's our number one demographic. So that's why I would like to see us address those young adults that still have questions. I mean, they don't disagree with our teachings, but they have questions for relevancy of their life. I don't think we're addressing as well as we should or could. Anecdotally, I hear from many pastors, there are people coming back from worldwide or that are coming from other Church of God groups as those churches move in whatever directions. But it's pretty flat, right? So baptized members that come in to replace members that are dying is pretty flat. We're holding our own. We're not really seeing growth. The unknown in that whole thing is what the seed's going to do that we're throwing out there. You know, what's going on good ground, what's being choked out, what just doesn't have the depth. And another challenge that we face is that back in the era, if you will, of Mr. Armstrong, he was pretty much the only one teaching what we teach. Before his death, there were more that were popping up. Certainly since his death in the last 40 years, our message is lost in the noise sometimes. There's so many people that seem similar. And that's a question that comes up regularly. Why are you different than this group or that group or whoever it happens to be? And that can even be discouraging to people because as they look at the church, and I don't disagree necessarily, why are you guys not together if you're teaching the same doctrines? And there's not a good answer other than humility and not desiring titles or positions. So I don't know what God has in mind there. I don't know if suddenly there'll be an upsurge. I've read a couple of times now in the last month that there's an interesting trend happening. There's not enough numbers behind it to say how much of a trend it is. And I've lost track of the generational names. What's the youngest generation that's in their early 20s? What's it called? Whatever that generation is called. They're turning back to religion, which is really interesting. They've avoided it for decades and decades. But there's an uptick in that generation attending churches, Christian churches in general. And what they find especially encouraging is more men than women. And historically in the Church of God, in the modern era, it's been more women than men. And so they've been at a deficit of finding husbands and having families in the church. So, you know, I don't know where God is leading this. Maybe we'll sort of hold our own, if you will, until the time of tribulation. We know there's going to be a great surge because the choice, again, is going to go back to being binary, isn't it? Revelation is going to be a playbook. You're going to see thing after thing beginning to be fulfilled, and people are going to be paying attention. You're going to have the two witnesses really, really bringing that message home. And people are going to have to make a choice. Yes, I'm going to do this, or no, I'm going to face the wrath of that end-time power. And there's going to be a huge number of people that come through that, but they're going to have to pay for it, it seems, mostly with their blood, because time is short. And the choice is going to have to be as clear as possible to God, what they're making. And maybe that's where we are. I don't know. I don't have any good answers. The council doesn't in general. So, sure.
Got one more question. You may not have an answer for this, but in Atlanta, I feel like we have a thriving congregation. It keeps growing. But when I travel through small rural country churches in Kentucky, Missouri, you know, North Alabama, even some of the West Coast, some of these churches are really, really elderly without young people. So they can get overlooked, I think, but if something doesn't change, some of these churches won't exist like 10 years from now. Is there any plan for that?
I'll put a finer point on it. Some of those churches shouldn't exist now, right? Because this is part of the challenge. You've got a pastor who's trying to cover 3-4 congregations, and some of those congregations are only 10 people. How effectively can he serve the other congregations if he's trying to serve these people? Should we realign congregations? I think, and I've mentioned this, is not something I'm speaking against home office. I think we missed an opportunity in 2010-11. We should have looked at where the members were. We should have looked at where we needed pastors to live, to serve the members. Because in some cases, we have pastors that are trying to serve remote areas. I'll give you one example. So Nick Lamari is the pastor in the Upper Plains. He pastors both North and South Dakota. So he has five congregations. Now, one of them technically is what we call a Bible study group because it's only like three or four people. But he'll go up there every 6-8 weeks to be with them. But he lives down near Watertown, which is southwestern South Dakota. But he's got Fargo, which is almost easily served better out of the Twin Cities. But even that's a distance. But it takes him, I think, more than 5 hours just to drive to Fargo. He has Sioux Falls, he has Brookings, and he has, what's the other one? I'm missing one. But anyway, Bismarck. So how well can we cover those? Are we going to have to start combining congregations as membership declines because that generation's dying out? There's still question marks, and those are questions. I would like to see the council address more of those kind of things because we can only kick that can down the road so many times, and something has to be done at some point. But more to pray about. Ask God to give us direction, to direct the administration, you know, to provide men that be willing to come on board. So I just spent the summer training a young man that's going to be serving in Canada. He's going to be living in Saskatoon. So that's Saskatchewan. As much as I hate Wisconsin winters, I'm glad I'm not in Saskatoon. But he's also going to be serving Winnipeg. That's a plane flight for him to get from Saskatoon to Winnipeg. And then he's going to be taking on two more congregations down the road. Canada's in a worse position than the United States is. They have five pastors for the whole country. So these are questions I have. Excuse me, that have been brought up from time to time, but so far we don't really have a plan.
Hi, I have a question. I've been told I'm an anomaly, which is certainly true because God just plucked me out of nowhere, and I've been in the church a very short time. And one of the things that's super duper hard about coming into the church out of nowhere is everybody in the whole church knows more about God than you do. So one of the things I had to do was work really, really hard to learn a lot about God. And I used the website ucg.org for all the sermons, because the great thing about really good sermons is they don't expire, right? Because they're solid when they were given, they're solid now. So I was just wondering if there's any effort or thought about preserving all of the information that's on the website, because it's just a treasure trove of information, and because it's also like a sole source. Mm-hmm. UCG.org is only the one place. So if something were to happen to that, how would somebody that was new, for example, have access to that valuable information?
So I'm not quite clear on what your question is. There's no reason that we are going to remove any of that content. It becomes challenging in the same way that the internet is challenging. How do you find, how do you access what you're looking for? That was part of the thought that they were hoping to address when they upgraded the website. There's still challenges there because, to your point, we have 30 years now of material, booklets, articles, magazines, videos of all kinds, sermons, all kinds of material out there. And so they're even working on developing a better search engine within our website so that people can better find those things, the categories they're in. They're also going to be working on creating internal links. So if you read an article, down at the bottom, it'll essentially said, if you're interested in this topic, here's another article that might be of interest to you. So you can just kind of follow that rabbit hole, just keep, you know, drilling down. But another resource that I would point out to you that I'm very comfortable passing on is it's a website called hwalibrary.org. And the individual who put that website together has cataloged not everything, but an exhaustive amount of what was produced and worldwide before Mr. Armstrong's death. So you can go back, you can even find his, what was called the Pastor General's reports. You can find the old correspondence courses. You can find even sermons that were recorded even back then. All the Plain Truth, Tomorrow's World, youth magazines, all of those are on there as well. So there's no end of information that you can access to help you in that regard. But I would also encourage you, as Paul did, don't compare yourself amongst yourself. Your calling is your calling, right? And simply because somebody else has been here 40 years doesn't minimize anything that God is leading you to. You'll get there in your own way, and you have your own path. So just keep at it.
Good answer. I appreciate it, but I just also want to just acknowledge that I do appreciate the website.
Yeah.
And hope that we'll always be there, but as the world gets crazier, it seems like have backups, and I'm not a technical person, but to have backups.
They do have backups. So the one caution, and this could be a very real thing down the road, is that you could essentially be shadow banned or banned completely off the internet. So right, if the culture around us shifts to a point where they don't want to hear, they're so angry at hearing anything that involves morality or godly character, you know, we could very well be, the term is deplatformed, right? There could be a point where we could not have a presence on the internet, but that wouldn't be of our own choosing. So I know they do back these things up, and they have copies. So even if something was lost for whatever reason, it could be restored. So it's still available.
Well, that's reassuring. That's what I was looking
okay.
for. Thank you.
You're welcome. Mr. Ost, I can't see. There you are, second row. So how long do you want to continue?
I was going to say until about 4:25 is what we originally intended, but if...
Okay. So other questions? Now's your opportunity.
And then even afterward, I'm sure they know they can still come find you.
So one thing you mentioned on the media front is that there's a lot of interest in religious content. Actually, some of the most notable and widely shared podcasts now in the world are like people debating religious truths.
Yes.
And a lot of our media is incredibly polished. It's like a guy standing up there talking about something, often, I'll be candid, like quite PC. I think we saw with Mr. Shaby, he was very bold, and it did actually drive a lot more engagement
yep.
and a
yep.
lot more subscribers. So I guess my question is, like, I know Scott Delameter well. I think it's more like how much leeway will the council and the church give to move to more modern media streams where people can be casual, even like being able to ask you a question and have you debate the validity of the Sabbath on a platform, not with sort of prepared prompts, but actually off the cuff, would be much more well received
yes.
by a younger audience. So I'm just curious, like, what's kind of held up the progress of, I'd
culture.
Say two things, speaking boldly and consistently boldly, and like kind of removing that PC into is the like new media forms that I think would drive a lot of value for us.
The answer, short answer, what has held us back? Culture, our culture, right? So if you look at the current Beyond Today presentations, they're really to a large degree following what Mr. Armstrong did, right? So they're now standing at a podium, but they're fixed. They're in a studio. It's very clear it's a studio. Right, they got slick graphics backing them up. They're wearing a suit and tie. You know, it's very scripted. They've got breaks to promote a booklet, you know, and it's there. We've done that since Mr. Armstrong. That's not, to your point, that's not the audience that's out there. The younger generations bristle at that. They don't want polish. They want off the cuff, as you say. They want unscripted. They want real. So that's also culture, because there are not a lot of pastors. Not that I'm the greatest thing, but there are not a lot of pastors that are comfortable doing what I'm doing, that will even have question and answers even within a congregation, right? Because it puts them outside their comfort level. So you have to be willing to be vulnerable. You have to be willing to answer a question and maybe even at times say, I don't know. Let's go look that up. I would like to think that we can get there, but that's part of the internals discussion going on. We're not getting a really good return on any of the things that we're doing in terms of media. I'm hoping Scott will begin to maybe address that, although he's going to have to move forward gently, because there are a lot of people that are they have thoughts and they've done this forever and they may not want to change. So he's going to have his own challenges there. But one thing that I would like to see happen is that, again, going back to our strategic plan, is we do allow for what we label as local initiatives. So even going back to Mr. Shaby, before he was even president, when he was pastoring in Central Florida, he had a weekly online Bible study that went viral. He had people that watched this from all over the world. And he continued that even as he was president. Wasn't promoted heavily, just viral. And he had plans to continue doing that afterwards, because I had a number of conversations with him, and he was expecting to just go back and pick up where he left off in that regard. But it requires a different mindset. And when you're in something long enough, you tend to get myopic, and you tend to have the view, well, this is what we've always done. I think we need to do, as a council, again, this is my opinion, I'm one of 12. I think as a council, we need to take a hard look at what we're doing, media-wise especially, and we need to purge. There are a lot of things that we do simply because we've always done them. And we've done things the way we do them because that's the way we've always done them. And I think to reach that younger audience and have more relevance in a cluttered world in terms of a message, we do need to speak boldly, as Mr. Shaby did. That showed the impact of being very direct and challenging. But even so, he was another one of those old white guys, right? So that's the challenge then of having younger men that can step into that role, be comfortable, speak the truth properly, boldly, correctly. So, I mean, we do have challenges. I'm not worried, though. God's in charge. So it's a matter of us being willing to let him direct us and wait on his timing. We've got a lot of money sitting in the bank. We've got money to do things. It's just a matter of whether we'll have the guts to sort of challenge ourselves and do some of these things. It's easy to spend money, but what is it returning? And God's very clear. He likes a return, right? Parable of the talents. He wants a return on what he's putting out there, and he's not unreasonable. He just wants us to try our best and then to ask the questions. That's the strategic conversation that we're not quite at where I'd like to see us either. When you don't know what needs to be done, you make an educated guess, right, based on the best information you have. Well, let's try this. You try this, and it's not returning what you would hope it is. Maybe it's doing very poorly. Well, okay, let's stop doing that. Let's ask the questions of what that was not satisfying and maybe redirect our questions and try something else. Mr. Armstrong actually did that a lot. Most members are not aware that Mr. Armstrong was actually one of the first ministers ever on TV. Back in the late 1950s. It wasn't on very long because there was not an audience yet. There was not a means by which most of America could tap into that the way they could with radio. So when he saw that it was not returning, he stopped. He didn't go back on TV until the mid to late 70s. And it bore really good fruit. I mean, there were hundreds of thousands of people. And I know because I did some of those demographic reports in Pasadena. At the height of the World Tomorrow telecast, Mr. Armstrong did, we had the potential to reach 95% of this country on Sunday morning. And that's all gone now, right? We don't even have cable. We can't literally buy our way onto cable almost anymore. Most of them don't want that content. And so those are the questions I think we need to have some serious conversations about. And so far, we're not quite there, but.
Yeah. Follow-up question is, I worked on a media project with the church for the last year, and one of the questions I continually asked, and I never really got a clear answer on, is what does return on investment mean? And I got a lot of, like, there's a different return for different things, but that's actually not how a business operates, right?
No.
And so I think this is a question that I kind of continually pushed on and was met with a lot of convoluted soup. And you know, I think it's there's a lot of benefit for the church and for even local congregations to know, hey, the goal of our work is to grow the body of Christ.
Yep.
And if we're not doing that, we're not doing the right things, and we should make some changes. And if everybody can align on that, then you can find proxy metrics to get to, you know, are they good indicators we're making progress or not. But I think that kind of clarity of what return is would be very beneficial, just kind of.
I think one of the big ones is the ministry in general, but even the membership. So going back to our longer history, if you will, of Church of God, up until Mr. Armstrong was the anomaly, right? There was no media before Mr. Armstrong, right? People didn't have newspapers, they didn't have magazines, they didn't have radio, they didn't have TV. So how did the word of God get out? Local evangelism. a lot of that was just example of members in the communities they lived in. People saw that they were trustworthy, they were hardworking, they were honest, they were faithful in their families, all these things, general characteristics, if you will, that didn't reflect in the world around them, but people began to see that. But then you also had ministry that would go out and evangelize. But they knew their scripture. They had to know it better than anybody else because they had to defend it. And there are times, actually, in the history of God's church where we actually had the Catholic Church, if you will, up against the wall because they could not defend their teachings with scripture. But then you also bring persecution when you're that bold. And I've actually heard some individuals say they don't want to be too well known because that'll bring persecution. It's like, that's not why we're here. Right? Christ himself said, you're going to be hated, right? You're going to have persecution. So if I'm not being persecuted, I should be asking my question, why? And if it's something that I'm doing. And so even our personal examples, and I'm sure many of you have those, that, you know, you show up at work with a matzah sandwich and they don't understand what this is all about. You know, you leave in the fall when your kids are just getting into school. What's that all about? You know, all these different things. To be even have a general conversation, here's why I do it, as people ask questions. And maybe, again, to my earlier point, maybe that's why we're at where we are. Maybe God is looking at refining us more, the body that exists now, refining us more. And that's not going to be how he's going to use us. That'll come with the two witnesses. I don't know, maybe. But I do believe there's still things that we should be doing better and that we can have harder conversations about that we're not addressing. And you know some of those metrics. but even the council's not talking about some of that. So God's patient, though, but I'm hoping that we're not exhausting his patience. I think we need to be about asking some of those things and reflecting on what we can do. I hope that addresses some of what you're bringing up. Okay.
If it helps, I don't have any other further questions. If we have one more, we might take one more. And then otherwise, Mr. Gerald Ost, you're on. And then after this question...
Oh, I'm sorry, we're done. No.
Get up here. And then after this, if you'll wrap up, and then we'll head
sure.
for some eats. Thank you.
Thank you very much for all that you do. Really appreciate you a great deal. And the council and all they've been doing over the years. I don't even know how I'm going to address this. I'll just say a few words and you can take off from there.
Okay.
I'm sure you would know about this. It's very important. When I came to Pasadena in 63, there were, my parents weren't in the church.
Yep.
I came in while I was in the Navy and grateful for that opportunity and had to stand on my own 2 feet. There was no one else, no minister, no church, nothing in Hawaii at the time. So my point is that when I got to Pasadena, there were a lot of parents who took the time and the effort and loved their children so much that they constantly gave them material from the church or
yep.
just books out here in the world on the Bible and then correct anything that wasn't mm-hmm. right. I know we did that when we took trips, Mary and I, over the years. We pastored 17 different churches. And in the process, you travel a lot. My kids, who are not kids any longer, we gave them books to read, and they would do that. I think part of the difficulty we have today is because of the culture. And the culture, the parents generally leave the children to themselves. And I don't think that they're teaching the children, you know, order, rules, whatever it might be. I think that's really been an important thing now in this day and age, that we may miss that area. I hear about our responsibility as a church and pastors and people at home office to be able to help the young people in camp, and I'm grateful for that. I think that's very important. Even more important, in my mind, is the parents' responsibility to encourage and sit down and have a, you know, talks with the kids about God and
yep.
on their level that they can understand. I'll leave with one example. I've done a lot of research because of my articles in the past, and one of them was that when they were having a great deal of difficulty with the universal church, you know which one I mean, mm-hmm. And in Italy, and these people had to flee for their lives. They were being persecuted for the truth of God. They went up to the mountains because the people, the prelates and others, would not go up in the mountains. It was cold up there. And they would go up there and they'd build their communities, and they would teach their children the Word of God. If they were ever found with a Bible, those people were generally put into prison and then killed. So you know what they did? Committed all of Job and a couple of other books. They committed them word for word.
Yep.
Didn't have to have a Bible. They talked about them, discussed them. They knew what they were. Of course, and those people lived. A lot of them lived. They weren't killed.
Yep.
But they had to endure these things, and so they committed the Bible to themselves. So it's an excitement in my mind for the parents to be excited enough and look out for their children so that they can teach them these basic things in language they understand and set the example for.
And I think, to your point, I think that is a strength within United, going back to that 70% number. Those children are not just staying because of camp. They are developing some wonderful relationships because they are scattered. In some cases, they may not have other teens in their local congregations at all. Mm-hmm. But I think the bigger reality behind that number are the strength of the family. And I think that's one thing the Church of God is doing better, and in that we're making that more real, as you illustrate. I mean, my parents did the same thing. I know many others did. You know, again, you have that focus, age appropriate, of what they can learn, what they should know, and sort of challenge them in their own ways. But to help direct them as well, help them get through those college years and help them to have some good foundation to build on, point them to relationships that would be valuable even in terms of marriage, you know, that someone's going to be compatible in that way and compliment them, that they raise their children in that way. So I think as a church we've done that as well. And so that's why I wonder if maybe God is looking at us more focusing internally to make sure we're doing these things better. And so we have some of those foundations, and that may be part of how we approach the world around us, because there are a lot of people looking for answers. I get calls all the time. I don't know if Mr. Ost, your son, does. Mm-hmm. I suspect he does. People know the world's broken. They don't know what the answers are.
Now they have adult camps for adults only.
Yeah.
I don't know what they're teaching them, but they've been empty, and so they want to get together in camps. Whatever they're studying, I know that's becoming a trend, I think, now in this country. So maybe that's what they're looking for as well. I don't know.
Well, it comes back to what I touched on in the sermon, is that, you know, we need to make sure that we're doing our part.
Yeah.
And then it was in Galatians 6, I believe, it talks about bearing with one another, you know, that we support one another, we help one another, we encourage one another, we strengthen one another in these things that we're going through so that we're not alone. I mean, it's an awful thing to be alone. Spiritually speaking, especially, but and maybe that's what God is looking for in us. And that's part of, I think, the challenge of why the council is not really at an answer right now, because how do you create programs for that? I don't know that we can. I think we just need to encourage the members to do what they know to do, and to do it consistently and faithfully. And
no one's perfect.
No,
we just do the
but
best.
You know. You don't finish if you quit. I mean, you just got to keep going. You got to pick yourself up, and you got to keep going.
That's right. Thank you.
All right. Last question.
No, sir. I'll ask you to do the following, even as we kind of wrap up here. If you would, out of appreciation for Mr. Dowd answering questions, would you do us a favor and give him a light little golf clap?
No.
There we go. If you have additional questions, don't hesitate to see him. You can come still find him. He's here, even informally. You can ask questions. At this point, there's some food outside, and we would certainly like, even if you're one of our visitors, to hang around. Not a giant meal, but just finger foods and some fellowship that we have. I don't recall here, did we happen to have asked a quick prayer on our food yet? I don't think we have. If not, then I'm going to ask you to bow your head just for a minute, and we'll ask a quick blessing on the food, and then we'll head out. Great God Almighty, we're greatly appreciative of being able to come before you each Sabbath, to come into your very presence at services, to be able to be fed by you. Thank you for the servants you provide in terms of the feeding. Thank you for the blessing of the message that we heard today. Pray that we take this information to heart. We devote ourselves to you to grow in grace and knowledge, even as We have that example of our elder brother, Jesus Christ. Now we have opportunity to have some finger foods and some additional fellowship. We ask that you bless the food, bless our fellowship. Please be with us. Help us to honor you, lead us, direct us, even as we seek to, again, grow in that character that is yours and your son Christ. Pray that you bless these things now and ask it all in Jesus Christ's name. Amen.
One last thing. So again, if you'd like perhaps a copy of this, I don't know who you would appoint locally, but give me a number. I'll give you a price. I don't make any money on this. I'm passing it along for what the cost is to me. So if you want to do that, just collect that and pass it on. Yes, I also have a PDF of this. So if you're not, you don't necessarily want a book, I have it in a PDF form, and I've set it up with bookmarks so it's easily navigable, and it has all the same information on there. It's a large file. If you want just a PDF, just send me an email. The easiest one is the UCG, so dan_dowd@UCG. Just send me an email, say I'd like a copy of the Harmony PDF. I'll send you a link from Dropbox. You can download it. It's a large, it's a fairly large file.
Would you be kind enough to leave? We can leave it on the table.
This is Mrs. Ekman's.
Okay. And then, well, in doing so, we can let people sign up, potentially, if they would like a copy.
Sure.
And either we can direct that at you electronically, they can pick it up from you, or we can produce them locally.
Yep.
Okay.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Thank you.